Welcome to Flashpoint, the podcast for filthy casuals by filthy casuals.
Hi everyone, and welcome to episode 84 of Flashpoint, recorded Monday, August 25th. I'm your host, David Holloway, and with me is a co-host who nearly beat Peter Capaldi as the choice for the latest Doctor. How are you doing? How are you doing, Simon?
Well, I'm taking the rejection pretty hard, but I suppose I'll bounce back.
Yeah, well, you can take some heart from the fact that he's considered, at least by me, to be probably the best Doctor since Tom Baker. So at least you were pipped by good competition. Now, it's been a bit of a... Simon and I, it's been a bit of an all-over-the-place couple of days. So without getting into the nitty-gritties, we do have a short interview for you this episode with Hilary Nicole, the community coordinator from BioWare, and that'll be coming up a little later. So we recorded that over the weekend, and then we had some illness amongst the team, so we weren't able to record last night, so we're recording tonight, Monday. And then probably by the time you hear this, it will be Wednesday or Thursday, because we're just waiting on the tick from BioWare to have the interview go live. So please bear with us where we're talking in past, present and future tense. Anything you want to add, Simon, or are you in the future?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think the talking about the time travel chatter is sort of foreshadowing for later in the episode.
It is, in a big way. All right, yes. So let's jump straight into Republic news.
You're not afraid? You will be.
You will be.
So, as I've mentioned, we'll have the interview with Hilary Nicole. In fact, why don't we throw to that as the first thing? So, as I said, we caught up with Hilary over the weekend, and here's that quick catch up with her. Hilary, thank you for coming in virtually.
Oh, no problem. And it's Friday for me.
That's right. Yeah, nice Friday evening for you. So, very, very grateful to Hilary for coming in. So, I know during the week we put out a call for listeners' questions, and we did get a whole bunch of them. And what we've done is decided to split it up into two sort of aspects. So today we'll talk to Hilary about general community stuff, Hilary's role within the company and stuff like that, and then the developer-specific stuff, which, to be honest, was the large majority of the questions we're going to submit via Hilary to BioWare, and then cover that off in a future podcast and probably on the website as well. So for those of you that did put in all the questions, we thank you, and we're going to get answers to those hopefully, but you won't necessarily have a lot of answers to those today, and that's just the way we've decided to do it. So let's jump in. Hilary, probably starting with yourself personally, can you give us a potted history of your time at BioWare and how you came to be where you are now as a community coordinator?
Well, I've been there for about 2 months, I believe. Time has just gone by so quickly, I can't recall the exact amount of time. But I came to be because I have been integrated into various different communities via my YouTube, and was in the industry already. I worked at Crytek as QA, and I also worked at Tryon before that as QA as well. But I felt community would be more suited to my, I guess, skill set because of I streamed, I did YouTube. I was familiar with a lot of social media forums and whatnot. And so that really helped because my job specifically is pretty much handling influencers of Star Wars. And so what that means is that's fan sites, that's guilds, that's just general people who cover Star Wars on YouTube or their Twitch streams. And being familiar with how to communicate with them and what each will need. Like, streamers don't necessarily need the same thing as YouTubers, who don't need the same thing as podcasts or websites. And so knowing all of that and being able, giving them someone to talk to and shoot questions at. And so, yeah, that's sort of how I came to be and why I'm here.
And so, I mean, being your third job in, and you've just mentioned fan sites, I know with Star Wars The Old Republic, there was that understandable huge expansion in fan sites initially at launch, and you know, the Darth Haters and the Tor Wars, and a lot of them have fallen by the wayside, but there's still a fairly dedicated mass there. What's your take on how things have changed in regard to fan sites and how you like to see the fan sites playing a role within the game?
I was around for the beta and launch of Star Wars, and I was a streamer, and so I definitely was familiar with all of that, with the fan sites, with the other streamers and YouTubers and all of that. And so what I'd like to see is just more involvement and you know, better communication. It's something I'm trying to work on and trying to get more, consistent and giving people the information in a timely manner. That way they can do something with it. Like when we do our streams, Galactic Stronghold streams that we did, I sent out emails saying, hey, we're doing these Stronghold streams if you want to tune in. And just things like that. And communicating with, I also want to get involved in communicating with guilds. So that way we can communicate like, hey, you know, we need your help with this or this. And the response I got from guilds just blew me away. I'm still catching up on how many messages I got from guilds, and I'm very, very happy. And it definitely surprised me in a good way.
And that's great. And that actually raised a good question. I missed the cutoff for questions, but I know I had a few messages from people saying that they submitted that information. Do you have a rough time frame on when guilds might hear back on their submissions?
Well, I'm not specifically going to message guilds saying, hey, I got your message. I'd do that, but then it would just probably flood my inbox as well.
Yeah.
I'm going to get the messages, and I'm taking down all the information. I'm still catching up on that because it was a lot. I'm happy. I'm very happy. It shows me that, you know, people were paying attention and they wanted to give me their info. So that's good. But should something come up where it's like, hey, we need to test this and we want raiders. And, you know, we want, of course, whenever you do things like that, or, you know, we want PvPers or we want social gamers or whatever it is that you want, that you want to test. Like, that's what that's for. Or, hey, we're having, you know, we're going to Cantina. Is anybody going to be there? You want to send that to sort of like your fan sites. So they can cover it. Maybe your guilds. I don't know. I haven't really decided, but it's nice to have the info.
And obviously, yeah, the inbox flooding's a valid concern. So it'd be more that you may provide some updates on the forums or wherever on where you're sitting with all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of the updates that I will give will be, it won't just be me. It'll be Tate. It'll be Courtney and Musco. It'll be all of us posting on the forums. So usually if I send something to them, it will also be posted on the forums already.
Yeah,
so.
Great. And so speaking of busy times, obviously Galactic Strongholds has hit for early access 2 days ago, our time at least. So what's your take on the response been generally to it so far?
Most of what I've seen has been really positive, and it is amazing. It's an amazing feeling to have a big launch like that and to get the general feel of people really enjoying it. And one cool thing is that, of course, we all were paying heavy attention to, like, you know, how's the community doing, and we all were logged into the game, and I was even in my stronghold messing around because I was having a good time. But yes, there are people who have feedback, which is great. There are some complaints here and there, but overall, I think that I've seen a very positive response. And I mean, congrats to the dev team; they did a really, really good job, I think. So
yeah, absolutely. Simon, did you want to jump in for a bit to give my, you know, dulcet vocal cords a rest?
I enjoy this. I enjoy your voice. All right, yes, I'll field the next one. So, Hillary, if you had to name any areas that you feel SWTOR may be lagging behind in general MMO terms, what do you think they would be?
I've played a lot of MMOs, and those who have followed me know this, starting with Ultima Online being my first. And not anymore do I have anything where I'm like, oh, you're lagging behind, because the one thing I really wanted was just put in. And that's strongholds. That's player housing. Mm. It is by far amongst my favorite things. PvP being my favorite, housing being my second. I mean, this dates back to Ultima Online, where if I wasn't going around ganking people and you know, raiding champion spawns, then I was in my house either recustomizing it or decorating it. Like, that's all I did, was play Barbies or kill people. That sounds
very balanced. So do you think you might be someone who's going to start looking at crafting decorations? Is that an area of interest for you?
I'm not someone who crafts. I'm a very lazy crafter. I won't deny that at all. My guildmates, I'm just going to make them do it. I'm just kidding.
Well, that's what a guild's for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Letting other people carry.
I'll do the achievements, like going out and downing bosses or, you know, conquests and war zones. I'll do all that stuff. But crafting, that's just not something I prefer.
So you're happy to earn the decorations, but you don't want to make them?
Yes.
Okay. Well, can't argue with that.
No, God, no.
So on the other side of the coin then, do you think SWTOR's leading the way in any particular aspect?
I'm going to be a bit biased, I think, when I say this, but I love Star Wars PvP. I absolutely love it. And my first character was a sage, and I leveled it primarily through the story. And then I have a Juggernaut, a Guardian, and a Sork that I leveled pretty much only through PvP. Once I hit 10, it was all PvP. And I was blown away. It's quick, it's refreshing, and I love the Guardian and Juggernaut. I just think they're astounding to play. And the Juggernaut especially just feels so powerful. And I have a tiny body type 1 character, and she has like this Power Ranger looking outfit, and she goes up and force chokes people, and there's just no greater feeling in my opinion. So it's sometimes hard for me to go back to my healer, actually.
Yeah. I'm starting to feel sorry for your Barbie dolls.
And look, as someone that plays a little bit of PvP in SWTOR, and without sounding too much like a fanboy, look, I'd argue that PvP in SWTOR is markedly superior to at least WoW. So, I mean, I do a lot of PvP in WoW as well. And just, yeah, the achievement system, it's more evenly balanced in SWTOR. Yeah, I think it's come a long way.
I definitely have a lot of fun in it, yeah.
Yeah, so... And I suppose one last thing about PvP is how's the reaction been generally to the PvP Season 2 rewards?
Well, I think it's safe to say that you know, we're all aware of the reaction that was received. The forums made it pretty evident that how they felt about the Season 2 PvP rewards. But it's also been addressed on the forums in a post from Alex Modney, where he talks about the reasoning behind their decision of making the rewards and how they wanted to make something a little more unique and mm-hmm. And how, you know, they're taking their feedback from this season and last season, and they're working on a better plan for Season 3. And so I think that with that information that they can get, that we can be hopeful for Season 3.
So it's a case of refining the product and distilling expectations to a degree.
Yes.
All right.
So we're definitely listening. We're definitely listening. And, yeah.
Okay. And, I mean, you guys have been out and about in the US and Europe with the community canteeners, have sort of hit their stride again this year. Is there any plans to potentially have one in Australia, particularly in our summer, so you get away from your winter? And obviously there, the key PAX Oz is coming up in, Simon, what is it? I've forgotten the month this year.
October, I think
October,
it is.
October, yeah, or the EB Games Expo, which is roughly around the same time.
Isn't it? That's in Sydney, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Is that something that there is, you know, potential for in the future?
Your summers are brutal, and you want us to go there in the summer?
Oh, the coast's all right. It's only inland that it's brutal.
I love Australia. I visited 2 years ago, okay. I think, And it was extremely, extremely humid and hot. But
you must
I did
have gone
love
to
it.
Queensland.
I went to Sydney.
Oh,
you
know? Okay. You're also used to, yeah, okay.
Sydney actually was surprisingly a lot similar to Austin in regards to just the atmosphere and the temperature. And so I guess I'm kind of used to it as well.
Yeah.
But as for plans to have a cantina there, I mean, that's something that we would love to do. It's just right now there are no plans for that.
No.
But I mean, like you said, PAX Australia is on the rise. And I look forward to seeing if we do that in the future, because I think that would be fun.
Okay, cool. And I mean, obviously PAX Prime's coming up. Is it next week or the week after? It's soon anyway.
It's for you, it's this week.
Yeah.
And for me, it's next week.
And I'm obviously not expecting anything as far as the announcements, but just as a general overview, what's your presence going to be there as far as what can fans expect to come and see if they come and see you guys there?
I'm actually, I personally am going as myself.
Yep.
Just as a convention goer, but I definitely would be willing to talk to people and hang out and say hi. But Musco's going to be there. Courtney's going to be there at the cantina event. There's going to be two devs that will be there answering questions and walking around talking to people and doing all that fun stuff. And so I believe, let me see. It's been announced. It's on what day? Sunday? The cantina itself.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
And so, yeah, they'll be there. I actually am going to be flying out because I'm going there, like I said, as myself. But it's my birthday, so.
Oh, nice. Congratulations.
Throw that out.
Yes.
One thing I have to know, though, is are you going to be, you say you're going as yourself, but are you going to be going in Pikachu cosplay?
If I go in Pikachu cosplay, it's going to be a giant Snuggie, and I'll be the most comfortable person at the whole convention. So
that's probably true.
I've debated, actually. I've debated, do I go as Charmander or Pikachu or not either? But, yeah.
It's a hard choice.
Yeah.
It is.
See, I have a Hulk onesie. That's about as close as I get to that stuff.
Okay,
you can totally
moving on.
Wear that.
Yeah. I must wear that one day. Noel, thanks. Yeah, it's just, you know, good to have an initial catch up and see where things are at. And as I've said, for those of you listening, that we'll have some more detailed responses on the dev side of things in coming weeks, probably after the hectic stuff around PAX and you know, Galactic Strongholds bedding down and so on. So bear with us for a few weeks, but we'll get that. And Hillary, let you have your Friday evening. Really appreciate you coming in at the time you have. And
Look forward to talking to you again, maybe.
Yes, it was fun talking to you both.
And that's been delightful.
Hi to your community.
So there we go. And as I said in the introduction, apologies to our listeners who maybe were looking for some more in-depth answers, but as I've explained, that probably wasn't an option, but we're confident in getting some developer answers to that in the coming weeks and months, so bear with us. So outside of, as you heard Hillary talk about the response to Galactic Strongholds, let's talk about our responses, Simon. You've been in there like me. How have you found it so far?
I quite like it, in all honesty. I have to admit, I did actually end up having a bit of a look around and thought, yeah, it's okay. It's clever. It's quite cleverly implemented. It's pretty flexible. There's certainly plenty of space. But then I just found myself going, yeah, but I don't really think there's much to hold me here.
No.
So I ended up going out of the game. And then for some reason, I can't remember what it was now. Just went back in again later that evening. And oddly enough, after just having a bit of a fiddle around with it, it was 2.5-3 hours later, I had a couple of rooms decorated in my Cass City apartment, and there was a little bit of a droid companion party going on in one room.
Cool.
And I thought, yeah, actually, I kind of like this. I've got my mounts sitting in the garage, and that looks pretty neat. Got some tool shelves lining the side there, and some uncomfortable metal chairs, which are the free pack you get when you first start getting some points together. I had my dash pile and my plant and my crystal in a barrel and the little harvesting things you can get sitting there along with my legacy storage terminal. And yeah, it's I started to get into it.
Okay.
So yeah, I like it, and I have to admit that I haven't seen the Coruscant one yet. I haven't bothered with that because I'm never really been a Republic player. But I much prefer the Cass City apartment. There's something about the sort of if we're going to be generous, let's call it gold and bronze color scheme of Nar Shaddaa and probably Coruscant as well, which is still a bit poo and piss as far as I'm concerned, as far as color schemes go.
Yeah, Coruscant, and I see, because I did buy the second one as a subscriber. It was only 5,000 credits or something. From memory, Coruscant had more blues in it.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
I think. I only walked around the once and then decided I'd better start with the Nar Shaddaa one, but I'm pretty sure it was blues.
Yeah, well, I was going to start with the Nar Shaddaa one, but I don't really like Nar Shaddaa very much. To be perfectly frank with you, I mean, brown walls, brown sky, probably brown water. Why you want to shell out for the balcony when the atmosphere is actually pretty toxic and caustic? Obviously, I'm sort of role-playing here a bit, but it's for exactly the same reason that I'm not going to buy the balcony. I bought the garage, but I'm not going to buy the balcony in Cass City because it's always raining. Who the hell wants a...
That's right.
What's the point of having balcony. A deck? It's like in Melbourne for about 20 years ago, it was actually a thing to fill in your swimming pools because the summers just weren't. You didn't get the sunny days anymore, so there wasn't really a point in having a swimming pool. Anyone who did that now, of course, is regretting it because the summers are just absolute bastards.
They are.
But,
Whereas Coruscant, the balcony's worth buying, although it's outside of my price league at this stage. I think it was, don't quote me, let's say it was 1.5 million or whatever it was, credits, and I've only got 1.2 to my whole name, so that's not going to happen.
Yeah. It's a lot of cash, but it's, as with the Guild flagships, they've clearly made, and they've said so, they've made some things where it's literally an achievement to get these things.
That's right.
It takes work. It's there. If you want it, you need to actually do a lot of crap to get it. And then it's an achievement. It's not just some random badge that pops up because you turned left at the right moment or you completed some fake ass tutorial.
Yes.
I don't have a problem with that within an MMO, especially if there's a game that's supposed to have RPG elements to it anyway. You should work. There should be a bit of grind. I mean, working in real life is a bit of a grind, but you do it to get food on the table,
that's right.
To get a nicer place to live, and to get stuff.
Exactly.
So why shouldn't the game reflect that? So no. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, in violent agreement. And just on your stronghold, would it be fair to say, and this will never happen, would your ideal stronghold be that in one of your rooms there was a nice little portal or door you could walk through and you walk through into Minecraft? Would you ever leave your stronghold?
I might replicate my stronghold in Minecraft.
Oh, I bet you it won't take long before someone does that. Is that a challenge you're willing to take up, Simon?
Well, I don't think it would take me that long, quite frankly.
You get lots of attention for it?
I need a lot of iron blocks, but I think I could do it.
Oh. So there you go, folks. You heard it first. By next episode, Simon will have replicated which one? The Cast City one.
Yeah, Cast City one. May as well do something that's worth replicating.
And while you're there, you might as well replicate Cast City.
Well, that wouldn't be a very big job. It's not very large. Not that big, no. Although, I admit, the views out the dojo, for the first time, you actually get a sense that Cass City is a city, not just some cheap set dressing around an open plaza, which is what it really is. I think they've done a good job.
They have. I agree. I think my view is I got a little bit, like yourself, got a bit bored initially, but I'll be going back and working on it. You'll be pleased to know my lucky 77 speeder is parked at the entrance of Manashadar stronghold. But if I'd paid for an expansion for just that, I think I would actually be a little bit angry, but I've got no reason to be angry because they didn't charge. It's just it's the next update, and it's a reasonable one.
I think so. And they're not going to be charging for it, so I don't mind if they charge for the next expansion, proper expansion.
No, absolutely.
If that's what we get.
No, I think the way they did Rise of the Hutt Cartel was reasonable price, and you got plenty of, a fairly decent amount of content for it.
Yeah, and I don't know if you've. I assume your Coruscant stronghold has got stairwells or stairways.
Yeah, it does, and that you get. I think from memory, you can walk up one, but you've got to buy the other one.
Yeah, there's a. I think the east one's free, and the west one you have to pay for. I'm not sure what to do with the west one yet, but you know those sort of step things that or the ledges that run up the side of the stairway. That's the perfect place to put the pets.
It would be too. Yeah.
For one very good reason. One, it's about the right size for most of them. And two, because a number of them make really irritating noises. Sticking them in a stairwell is probably the best place for them.
Yeah, that's right.
That really works quite well. The only thing I wish is that apart from the right, we had a way of putting our GSF scouts or whatever in the garage as well, not just the mounts we can ride around on.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I would like that. I mean, they've only got to scale the models up because I know and I found this out during the beta testing, is compared to your character, they're about the same size as one of those kiddie ride-on things you find outside drugstores and supermarkets.
Okay.
They're literally that small compared to your actual
your
character.
Actual things, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes
sense. Which is fine because.
I mean, and this is where the whole stronghold thing's made me realize just how I haven't been hardcore enough. I mean, I've got all of six pets, and the amount of actual things I could throw in mine was pretty bloody limited. But
really?
Yeah,
but I had enough pets to fill one stairway.
Yes,
and
I'm impressed.
Well, yeah, but the thing is, I've got like four things I can actually put on the wall.
Same.
So I need to do more flashpoints and more operations to score some of these things because, it's getting a bit boring walking past the same four pictures.
Yeah,
you get plenty of place. I think you can put like 10 instances of them down around your apartment, but you get pretty sick of them pretty quickly.
Right.
Also, just while we're talking about instances, they did BioWare did mention that you can only have 25 NPCs because any more than that, and it starts causing performance issues not only in your stronghold but other people's strongholds.
Okay.
So, yeah, I suppose that's another thing we have to thank the Hero Engine for.
Yes. Yeah. I have all my companions waiting for me at the entrance of Manashadar 1 and then some banners, and then you walk in and it's just dead bare. But I've got some work to do.
Put a rug down.
I will. That's the next plan.
A rug helps.
A rug does help.
Yes.
So... And moving beyond Galactic Strongholds to coincide with Gamescom last week or week before now, might even be, BioWare held one of their community cantinas. And again, thanks to the legends at Dolphy, there's a nice little blog post, which I'll link to, with all the flash drive contents. And this is probably one of the meatier ones, I'd argue. There's, seven decorations for your strongholds, none of which are particularly got me excited, but they're... You know, the more variety, the better.
Well, there's a bar, so that's good.
Yeah, there is a bar. Any man cave needs a bar.
And there's a hospital bed, which you'll probably need after the bar.
That's right. The Guild flagship stuff, there's some lovely photos in there. They're worth a look. Was there anything that particularly got you excited? So I just like the space shots. They look quite good.
The space shots are nice. I would really like it if you could actually... You know how when you since I don't belong to a guild, I don't know if this is what happens. But one of the shots, I think it's number three, it shows a ship. I can't specifically. I don't actually looks like a shuttle. I think flying towards one of the Imperial flagships, And I really would like it if you had the animation like you do when you take your ship to another planet.
Yeah, yeah.
Where you see your ship fly towards it, or a shuttle fly towards it, or whatever. If you got that same animation, I really would like a little bit more immersion. But then,
yeah.
I suppose that's one of the reasons I'm drawn to Star Citizen, is because that gives me
that level.
That's that level of thing that that there's no realistic or reasonable way of expecting the Old Republic to.
No. And just to segue, last episode you mentioned it wasn't Star Citizen. What was the other one you were excited by? There was another sandbox space. Anyway, I checked out a YouTube video of that, and I was mightily impressed.
It looks great, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Why have I forgotten the name? Does it begin with E?
E, yeah.
Probably begins with Q.
Oh, Q-Bert, I think it was. So, and then the Ricarda Prime instance, there's some nice shots of that too, but I won't.
Yeah. Well, I'm just going to say, if you're a KOTOR player, then it's going to look very, very familiar to you as the last planet you go to before you head off to the Forge, because it's the same planet that you land on before you head off to the Forge. But it looks just like a high res version of what I remember from KOTOR. In all honesty, right down to the fact of the massive ship bulks sort of on the horizon and being on the tropical beach, and these things are just sort of embedded way off in the distance, looking huge. And
that's what I love. Actually, that's epic. Some of the cooler stuff with SWTOR. I love some of the distant stuff that you see in the horizon. Always like that. Community Cantina, very cool. And then wider within MMOs is obviously in the last fortnight, Blizzard unveiled the cinematic trailer for Warlords of Draenor, the next expansion, and unveiled the launch date. And would you believe I've forgotten it. It's something like 11th of November. Anyway, it's mid-November sometime, 14th might be. Apologies for not having that in front of me. I actually got dedicated as one of the slackest gamers in history and actually stayed up till 2:30 a.m. for the launch, watched it on the Blizzard site. The cinematic, if you haven't seen it, and I'll put a link in the show notes, is really, really cool. I'd put it up there nearly as good as those original SWTOR ones, although I wish they'd do more of those. And then the launch date, and they also unveiled or showed the first episode of their lore series, Lords of War, I think it's called. It's going to be half a dozen or so episodes, really delving into the lore behind some of the key characters. And I must admit, I really liked it from a viewpoint of actually getting my head around Warcraft lore, which leaves me really cold at times.
It's very well done. I think they did it for was it Pandaria or Cataclysm? This isn't the first time they've done a short series just to help you catch up with lore, but it's an excellent idea because a lot of people just aren't into reading the books.
That's right.
Or reading the in-game text.
Oh, God, yeah.
For that matter.
And the art style is interesting. It's a real storybook style, drawing on the fly. Yeah, I like it. So as I've said before, it really impresses me just how much they're not resting on their laurels with what is a bloody old game. They're still giving it their best. So, yeah, worth checking out the cinematic. I know I'll obviously buy in the expansion, and a little birdie tells me, Simon, you're now thinking of maybe.
I am. If nothing else, I'm intrigued by the premise and also having the new models.
Yes.
Available as well, because that's, I don't know if what they're doing in the way of updating the game engine, but well, I know they did update the game engine a couple of expansions ago, but still. It's a remarkably substantial difference, especially for a game engine that's as old as it is.
Yeah. The characters, I think from memory, I know Orc is one of them. They haven't done all of them, but yeah, they show some nice before and after shots in one of the other videos, and it's very noticeable.
So. Yes. Sorry, I've just remembered something about SWTOR. One of my bugbears has been fixed.
You can sit down.
Well, you could always sit down.
Yeah, no.
Just depends what you chose to try and sit on. when you slash sleep, you lay down.
Yeah, well, that's because what you used to sit you down as well, didn't it?
No, you fall into a deep sleep and you just stand there like a horse. I don't want to sleep like a horse. So that's been fixed. If you sleep, you will actually lay down. I don't know why it took so long, but it's been fixed. So thank you, BioWare. Thank you.
Yes, very good.
Now just bring in swimming.
Yeah, swimming would be nice.
Yes. The entire universe can't be covered in ankle-deep water.
No, that would be nice. That's something, yeah, I do like about WoW. And then the last thing on MMO stuff is Elder Scrolls Online have introduced a loyalty program for long-term subscribers. Not that you could have any super long-term subscribers, but I'm sure there will be eventually.
That's true. Basically, it's for anyone that's been subscribed since the game started. And I think that what they're doing is they're working it in. If you've been subscribed for 3 months, you get something. So it's not going to be like SWTOR have done, where if you're subscribed up to such and such a date or during such and such a period, you get this. This works more on an incremental basis. So if you're subscribed for 3 months, you'll get such regardless of whether it's 3 months from the beginning of the game or 3 months from now. And then after 6 months, you'll get another thingy and so on and so on and so on. So it'll accrue regardless of when you start, but you need to be consistently subscribed within that period.
Which I like that approach. Yeah.
Well, you don't end up missing out. And if you're loyal now or loyal later, you still have the potential to earn the rewards. Now, most of them are going to be vanity items, obviously, but hey, why not?
Yeah,
it's nice. It's nice to be acknowledged. Exactly. I think that's really what it comes down to.
Yes. And then I just see you've thrown in Star Citizen, new ship. So Star Citizen is like your little drug of choice, a bit like Eve was Chris's. So hit us with Star Citizen. I can't even pronounce it.
I can't really say it's my favorite game.
No.
Because it's not really a game yet.
No, true.
But the promise. Oh, the promise.
So what are the new ships in 5,000 words or less?
Well, really, it's not a case of new ships as new variations on an existing ship. So if you own a Connie, a Constellation, then you'll already know about this. But what they've done is they've released 4 versions of the Constellation. So if you've already owned Constellation, you will have the Andromeda, which is basically a multi-role craft, effectively now. So it's pretty well armed. It's pretty fast. It's got decent storage space, and a P-52 Merlin, which detaches. Now the way it was with the original Constellation, I'm probably going to bore the crap out of everyone here, but the way it was before, it actually filled up a good part of your cargo hold. And if you wanted to put cargo into your ship, you really had to get the snub fighter out from underneath to load cargo up. Or if you wanted to get into the snub fighter, you'd actually have to move the cargo somehow. So it was not a great design.
Oh, future world problems.
Yeah, I know. So what they've done is they've remove the snub fighter from where it was. They've made that into basically a two-level, or it's not twin level, but it's two levels high cargo area. So you can actually see that as being a substantial, holding a substantial amount of cargo now. And the snub fighter's been moved to the back of the ship, and there's like an umbilical that you can get to from the very back of the craft down into the fighter, and then it attaches and launches from there, which is a much better way of doing it. So that's the Andromeda. There's a cheaper version, which is basically just purely for cargo. It doesn't have so much in the way of armaments, but it's like an entry level pure cargo haulage. As I say, the Andromeda is sort of next one up. That's multi-role. The Aquila, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, is the exploration ship. So that you have the option of getting the snub fighter on there, but it doesn't come with one. but it does come with a little surface rover, which is interesting in itself because it's really the first time that exploring the planets or a planetary surface has come up as something that's really going to be available.
Mm.
Well, it's been talked about, but the fact that they actually developed a ship with a vehicle for that specifically would suggest that that's probably a more tangible thing fairly earlier on than we'd suspected. And then after the Aquila, they've got the Phoenix. Now, that's basically is classified as a luxury touring ship. For some reason, it has, well, I've got to admit, I like it because if you're going to spend any time in your ship, you want something fairly comfortable. And this thing, it's like a Saudi prince's yacht in that it seems to be all gleaming white and wood grain inlays. It looks awesome, though, if that's your thing. It also has a jacuzzi. I'm not sure about the jacuzzi. I'm hoping there's an option to replace that or upgrade it. Quite frankly, in a spaceship, I prefer to have a ball pit. If I had to choose between a jacuzzi or a ball pit, I'd go for a ball pit. Or maybe a McDonald's. McDonald's would be kind of cool. Anyway, a jacuzzi just doesn't really seem to have a high value in a starship.
No, the water would slosh out.
Well, and with artificial gravity, it wouldn't. Although it would if you made sudden turns, because inertia would, artificial gravity or not, inertia is still an issue. But that's like another $125 US to upgrade from the stock Andromeda. So if you'd already spent $275 on your Constellation pledge, for another $125 US, you can upgrade to the Phoenix. I don't know how many people have done that, but I did notice the sales figures or the pledge amounts shot up colossally. They're past the 51 million mark now. Good. But yeah, it's a lot of people clearly upgraded.
Mm. Well, there needs to be a lucky 77 Constellation for me to subscribe or buy, but we'll see.
Well, if you know someone with a ship in the game, then you can always just crew.
That's true. Thank you for that Star Citizen update.
You're welcome. I hope it wasn't too boring.
No, not at all. I'm not sure you kept within the 5,000 words, but it was still good.
You never mentioned the 5,000 words.
Yeah, I did. I said in 5,000 words or less, tell us about Star Citizen.
You assume I was listening to you.
Yeah, true. So speaking of people that don't listen, it's probably now a good time to bring in our friend ODS1 with the latest lore update for Your Lore Is Stuck in My Canon. And I believe ODS1 is talking about the Hutts with a little bit of Nar Shaddaa mixed in. So over to you, ODS1.
Thank you, Master David. May I just say how happy I am to be here and be part of this wonderful podcast. Excellent. Test of Boldface Lie Circuit complete. Welcome, listeners. Today we'll be looking at the galaxy's most proficient crime lords, the Hutts. And you should believe me when I say that looking at Hutts, while unpleasant, is preferable to engaging any of the other senses with them. Since most of you moved into your new strongholds floating high in the crystal clear skies of Nar Shaddaa, you may as well meet your neighbours. As you know what they look like, I will keep my description perfunctory. While most would describe them as slug-like, I prefer to compare them to giant leashes with the teeny tiny arms of a Tyrannosaurus Rex. Hutts are spineless, literally. In fact, their bodies have no bones whatsoever. Their closest analogue is a cartilaginous mantle which maintains the shape of their skull, while the rest of their body is maintained by rings of muscle. A Hutt skin is thick, turning from a uniform tan in youth to a unique bottle pattern of various wide-ranging colours. In fact, this widely differing pigmentation has been noted frequently, although it has not been well studied, as most researchers in the field seem to die prematurely. The skin secretes oils, mucus and sweat, making a Hutt difficult for an attacker to hold, and theoretically a slipping hazard should one attempt to walk over or upon one, even if done as a shoddy piece of CGI. The secretions are also a hut's primary mobility aid, as they lay a slime trail down wherever they go. This makes uneven, textured or absorbent surfaces a physical obstacle to them. Huts are resistant to many poisons, both internally and externally. Their tough skin and layers of slime and mucus protect the outside, and a robust digestive system rejects or excretes toxins with little impact. It is also said that huts are indigestible to any other creature. No known creature would attempt to bite a hut, and anything large enough to swallow them whole has invariably expelled them in short order. Pronouns are a problem with huts in that they are hermaphrodites, and actually that's about all I think you need to hear about their reproduction. It is actually quite interesting, but you need to be prepared. Huts are very long-lived. Childhood lasts until they're about 70, adolescence lasts until they're about 90, and their adult years last until approximately age 650. Middle age until about 844, and old age beyond that. Culturally, huts are somewhat unique in not feeling any need or importance in justifying their needs, wants, or actions within a moral framework or philosophy. A hut wants more, and that is all there is to it. They respond poorly to threats, either explicit, implicit, or imagined. In fact, it is this constant paranoia that makes them rather easy to exploit, despite their cunning and power. The other way to exploit a hut is to serve them faithfully and well, since they have proven to be generous and benevolent to those that do. This is not inconsistent when one remembers that their lack of a common moral framework means many traditional concepts held by the huts were viewed by outsiders as criminal acts. In fact, the huts do not have a word for criminal. While the huts are well known for dealing in and owning slaves, they were not generally seen as a viable labour source on anything but a small scale, as large slave forces were hard to motivate, prone to uprisings and other logistical problems. Mostly slaves were used for personal service and as status symbols. For large-scale labour requirements, the huts preferred indentured servitude, where individuals would enter into contracts of indenture as an alternative to the hut courts. The contract would suspend their personal rights of free movement and assembly, choice of occupation and employment. Contract terms usually lasted between 6 months to 10 years. These contracts could be bought or traded by other huts, so you may want to be careful of incurring any parking fines while on Nar Shaddaa. Those things can add up quickly. I would talk next about hut society, and while this is quite an involved area of discussion, let me just simplify things and sum it up by saying clan is everything, family is everything, but kill any hutlet you can just in case it's competition in the future. Did I mention how infrequent hut births were? So that's the huts. But where did they come from? I'm so glad you asked. They evolved on the planet Vaal, and like so many worlds, it was once part of the glorious Infinite Empire. Vaal was in a binary system consisting of the stars Ardo and Evona, worshipped by the early huts as gods, and regrettably mythology is pretty much all that remains of early hut history. According to the myth, legendary Vaal was a lush paradise rich with life, until Evona, the goddess star, was swallowed by a black hole. And in fury, Ardos flung off his outer layers, destroying the black hole and all the planets and moons in the system, leaving only a now barren and airless Vaal. The huts fled the planet before this, although how they knew what was coming is not recorded. They settled on their colony on Evokar, which was promptly renamed Nalhata. They believed that by escaping a calamity that even their gods could not, they had been raised by the cosmos to near godhood themselves. So now you can see where their sense of entitlement and the basis for their massive egos come from. With such a mythic backstory underpinning their culture, the Hutt's first acts of empire building were inevitable. Sometime after 25,200 BBY, their reach covered a significant part of the outer rim and part of the mid-rim. For a little over 200 years, theirs was the most powerful government in the galaxy, one built on genocide and slavery. By 25,102 BBY, the Tianese warlord Zim the Despot rose to challenge the Huts. Initial contact was peaceful, but soon degenerated into bloody conflict as the Zim-Hut conflict of 25,100 BBY began. This war ended in the Third Battle of Vontor, where the Hutt's mercenary-led army of slaves defeated Zim's army of war robots. With Zim captured and their forces depleted, the Tion cluster was invaded by the Hutts, who left little behind but ruins. 900 years later, the fledgling Galactic Republic discovered the Permalian trade route, and through it, Hutt space in the Tion cluster. Both the Hutts and the now-recovered Tianese, in the form of the Honourable Union of Deservo and Tion, saw these new, rich worlds as ripe fruit. The Hutts moved first, sending in raiders that depopulated entire colonies and seized convoys of goods before vanishing back into their own space. This led to many unaligned worlds in the core petitioning for membership in and the protection of the Republic, causing it to grow rapidly. However, while resource-rich, the Republic still lacked a strong military. Seeing a rich, soft target, the Union invaded, beginning the Tianese War, a conflict only won by the Republic when their agents drew the Hutts into a series of attacks along their border with the cluster. The Union, taxed to breaking point, collapsed, and the Hutts once again killed and destroyed everything they found. Eventually, the recovering worlds of the cluster petitioned the Republic for membership. This, amongst other actions, helped the Republic fix the coreward boundaries of Hutt space. Rather than a confrontation, the Hutts continued to expand along the outer rim and disregarded any Republic encroachment into their own territory so long as their economic power was not compromised. Located on a primary trade route, Nal Hattar and Nar Shaddaa prospered, but slowly trade hubs shifted with the growth of the Republic, and with them the significance of trade routes. Nar Shaddaa and its primary became a haven for smugglers, pirates, and other criminals. Nar Shaddaa quickly gained the nickname the Smuggler's Moon. As the Hutts were only interested in profit, this shift was of no real importance, and they rapidly inserted themselves into the criminal underworld and subsequently the corporations of the Republic. The Hutts' ongoing success meant that by the advent of the humanocentric Piers Deia sect, the Hutts were a highly visible and rather loathed group, making them an easy target for a sanctioned series of crusades by the then-Supreme Chancellor, Contispex, in 12,000 BBY. Over the next 1,000 years, the galaxy alternated between hot and cold wars, driving many aliens to the relative safety of the Outer Rim until the end of the Piers Deia influence in 11,000 BBY. In the Jedi Civil War and the later Dark Wars, the Hutts had to deal with the growing influence of a criminal organization known as the Exchange, whose brazen expansionism included a briefly successful takeover of Nar Shaddaa itself. With the emergence of the Sith Empire, the diminished Hutt cartel played little part in the Great Galactic War. However, they were still a significant power, and Imperial intelligence devoted significant resources to block all Republic efforts in gaining Hutt support. After the Treaty of Coruscant, the Hutts largely remained neutral during the Cold War period of 3654 BBY, where they did not side either with the Republic or the Sith. However, Nar Shaddaa remained a common gathering ground for criminal elements throughout the galaxy, and all this was tolerated so long as the Hutts were given a cut in any profit generated. During this time, the Hutts were known to continue facing predations from the Exchange and worked with several crime syndicates against them through informants within each of those organizations. Following the apparent death of the Sith Emperor, the Hutt cartel began openly turning against both the Republic and the Empire. This saw the invasion of the planet Mekeb, but then you already know about that, don't you? After all, you were a pivotal figure in that incident. So let's just end by giving some old advice. Keep your friends close and your Hutts downwind. Speaking of terrible smells, Master David, back to you.
Thank you for your semi-kind words as always, Odious One. So we're sort of running a little bit over, and with everything with the interview with Hillary and Odious One, we're going to skip over general gaming news, mostly because, Simon, I think it's fair to say neither you and I have much time to do general gaming.
Correct.
Outside of MMOs. So let's just pretend that bit doesn't exist. and jump straight into pop culture.
I can feel your anger growing.
So there's really only two things we're going to cover, and the most obvious one is Doctor Who. So at time of recording, it's a bit over 24 hours since those of us that don't get up at 10 to 5 in the morning watched Doctor Who, and although apparently about 170,000 people did get up at 10 to 5 in the morning.
Yeah, sad bastards.
And they announced today, the ABC announced that you're going to have the option of getting up to 10 to 5 every morning for the remainder of the series. So that's interesting. Obviously, they like those ratings, overnight ratings.
Yep.
So I think it's fair to say, I think, Simon, that neither you and I are Whovians by any stretch of the imagination, but we both like the show.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's not a show I'm fixated on, but no. I do follow it fairly regularly because sometimes they can be quite sharp and poignant. Other times they're just downright daft. But
yes,
it's usually worth having a look at.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Capaldi, I made the claim on Twitter that I think Capaldi is going to be the best Doctor since Tom Baker. And after watching the one last night, nothing's dissuaded me from that as yet. I think he will come into the character and he's going to do extremely well. And I just love seeing an old fart back in the role.
Yeah, well, what did you think about the way that was explained?
About why he was old?
Yeah.
Oh, see, I'm hopeless at subtext. Was it really explained? I like the way they work with Clara, that they work Clara through the narrative of, you know, it's not about him being young for everyone, including the universe, so that the universe would like him and therefore...
Yeah, well, there was a bit of that, but right at the end, before she got out of the TARDIS to make the phone call or receive the phone call.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The Doctor said something along the lines of, "I'm not your boyfriend."
That's right.
And Clara says, "I never thought you were," or something like that.
That's
and
right.
He responded, "I didn't say it was your mistake."
Yeah. So what's your reading of that?
That perhaps
That it was him that had the obsession with her. Yeah,
yeah. That maybe that was a fantasy he was engaged in, and it's kind of interesting because I was just sort of following some of the conversations about all this, and an interesting observation was made that back in the day where Sarah Jane, which some of you may possibly know of, if not remember. Who was a companion to the third Doctor, John Pertwee.
Yeah.
And she ended up leaving because she met a...
environmentalist or something, wasn't it?
Yeah, an environmentalist. And she told the Doctor that she was going to be staying, and I can't recall exactly how it came up, but she mentioned to the Doctor that her new flame sort of reminded her of a younger Doctor.
That's right.
Of a younger him. And although he never said anything to her and took it all with good graces, after that they cut to him driving away alone.
Looking forlorn.
Looking forlorn, exactly.
Did you and I read the same article on the
Atlantic
today?
I think we must
today?
Have done. Yeah. But I thought it was a very good point. That you could read his expressions as being, well, what if I was a younger me?
That's right. Yeah, I think we read the same article.
I think we did, but it's a very interesting point.
No, it is.
Because up until then, he'd been he'd been a crotchety old man, a crazy tramp guy, and then the distinguished John Pertwee. He does incarnate as a somewhat younger Doctor the next time around with Tom Baker.
Tom Baker, yeah.
And there, who does have a relationship, obviously.
Yeah.
Sort of, with Romana.
K-9. Oh, sorry, yep.
And it's a role he probably hadn't really explored that much, but definitely did when he ended up going from the Christopher Eccleston, who's what Doctor 9, number 9?
Something like that, yeah.
So the first Doctor of the new series run. And who's older than Rose, quite a bit older than Rose, to sort of the more boy toy David Tennant Doctor. Yes. And then
I nearly called him Neil Tennant, but that's the guy from the Pet Shop Boys.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then arguably an even younger one with
Matt Smith.
And maybe just realise that this is just not – this is the wrong way to be going.
Well, they could have gone the whole hog and had like a teen Doctor Who. That would have been funny.
Well, they almost did.
Yeah.
Really, Matt Smith's about as close as they could possibly get.
Yeah.
No, so, I mean, what the age difference between him and Clara actually was, I can't imagine it being that substantial.
No.
Well, with the actors, obviously. I mean, the Doctor's 900 years old or whatever he is, regardless of what he looks like. And that's the interesting thing I thought that they made here. And also with the story they were following, because you recall in the story that when he had the confrontation, and spoilers for anyone who hasn't seen it yet, when he confronted the robot and he was doing the broom analogy about swapping the head and then swapping the handle, is it still the same broom? Obviously it's not. You've changed every part of yourself, so there's nothing left of the real you. And I could be wrong, but I thought I saw a look in his eye where he just sort of thought, shit, that applies to me as well.
Yes, that's right. No, it looks a nice setup.
I thought it was well done. And I think he's going to be a good doctor.
Yes. I still wish for more stuff set in other planets, but I don't think it's going to happen. They're a bit Victorian era obsessed too for my liking, but anyway. It's all good.
It does seem to keep coming back to that, doesn't it?
It does.
But the reptile lady and her friends, they probably need their own spin-off.
Yeah, they'd be a good spin-off actually. Yeah, agreed. The Leftovers is another show I believe you'd like to mention.
Yeah, just briefly. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't. Sorry.
Knowing full well that you haven't. I could just tell the way you read
that. Yeah.
Well, it's an interesting little show. It's an HBO drama, so that gives you some idea of what we're looking at. It's speaking of Doctor Who, it's actually Christopher Eccleston is actually in there doing a perfectly plausible American accent. Liv Tyler as well. Okay. It's got a very good cast. There's Justin Theroux. I've never heard of him before, but he's been in plenty of stuff. Now, it's a series that is being penned, by Damon Lindelof, who some of you may know as being involved with the scripting of Prometheus.
Oh, yeah.
And also Lost. Now, I know some people loathe Prometheus or at least have issues with it.
Yeah.
Personally, I don't really have that many. I'm aware of the arguments, but
it's a beautiful film as far as how it looked.
Yeah. And people have problems with Lost in that they didn't think the ending was particularly great. Now, the setup for The Leftovers is to essentially 2% of the population vanish one day, all at the same time.
Okay.
And no one knows why.
Scott Morrison. Sorry, keep going.
Scott Morrison?
The immigration minister that he's disappeared 2% of the population. Don't worry, keep going.
Oh, right, yeah.
Sorry. Shouldn't bring politics into a gaming podcast.
No.
Particularly, I know he listens to this podcast. Sorry.
Yes, as do many politicians.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it shows just this incident briefly at the beginning, and then it picks up 3 years after this. Well, obviously, the immediate thing most people would probably think of is some sort of rapture. In God scoops people up before the 1,000 years of horror, effectively. So what exactly did happen, whether it's aliens or some form of spontaneous combustion that leaves no trace and is instant? There's no real way, and after 3 years, people still don't know what happened. So really what this is a show about is how people cope with that uncertainty, that unknown.
Okay.
And I'm actually finding it intriguing. One of the things that's been made quite clear, apparently, partly because of the general dissatisfaction with the sort of answers or lack of answers supplied and lost, Lindelof has made it plain that the cause of this disappearance is not going to be revealed. People are going to have a problem with that. I personally do not, because when you think about it, there's a lot of things that happen in the world that we don't really understand. I mean, what happens when you die? People think they know. Some people think when you're dead, you're dead. Some people think that you reincarnate. Some people think that you go to heaven. There's a number of different theories about what happens when you die. This is an unknown that we live with every single day of our lives. And so in some ways, this is an exploration of how people cope with a sudden escalation of that kind of that's unknown. Right. And I mean, that's where I think that's what's interesting about this show, is just showing how some people react, cope, don't cope. I just think it's quite fascinating. I don't want things to be mushed up and fed to me with a spoon necessarily. And this show's not
like,
to do that.
It's a bit like The Walking Dead too. You know, I assume that you never find out what caused the zombie apocalypse, just that it has occurred.
Yeah. And I think there's a lot of value in that.
Yeah. Agreed. Cool. So I'm going to be checking that. Yeah, look, HBO, and you've convinced me. That's going to be worth a look. Excellent. I've been watching the only TV thing I'd made is Derek, Ricky Gervais's Derek Series 2. I've started watching, and for those that watch Series 1, he plumbs even newer depths of depravity with this one. It's still very funny, though. Have you seen Derek?
I don't actually find Ricky Gervais very funny.
Oh, yeah, I know. He's very polarizing person. I know you either love him or hate him. I'm in the love side of the equation, but I know a lot of people don't find him funny.
Well, I don't hate him. I just suffer secondhand embarrassment with him.
Yeah, okay. I know what you mean. I think Sunshine's out his ass. But
same reason I don't watch talent shows or that sort of thing, because I don't want to see someone stumble and fall or just make a fool of themselves. I'm not good with cringeworthy. If someone's opening up someone's guts with a rusty spoon, I could watch that quite happily, but not good with embarrassment.
No, Ricky Gervais plays a lot on awkwardness and embarrassment.
It's very English, and I'm not actually very good with English humour.
No, fair enough.
For the most part.
So, cool. Well, we're well and truly. Oh, now we've got our last segment of the night, which is the tech roundup.
It does have its moments. Not many, but it has them.
So Microsoft, and when I first saw this, Simon, the DeLorean, obviously thought of Back to the Future, but there's a nice new piece of software from Microsoft that's aiming to reduce some of the God-forbidden game lag we all suffer from at different times.
Yeah, and this is the sort of thing that's going to be even more important with streaming games. Like, now, PlayStation Now seems to work quite well, but obviously it's very much dependent on your internet connection. And DeLorean will be as well. Obviously, that's just a code name. But effectively, what it does is it uses what they're calling a speculative execution system. So that predicts what you do next, and then the idea is it pushes that down the line before you've done it, so that when you do it, it's already there. There's no lag. And that's the magic of it. Now, exactly how it works is still something of a mystery, but it sounds very much like what they're doing is pushing a couple of variations of your most likely actions down the line, so that they're ready for you when you do one thing or the other. So it's a lot faster. So latency isn't an issue, but bandwidth obviously can become a problem. Because you're effectively doubling or perhaps more the amount of data that's having to be downloaded.
Yeah, they're saying up to 5 times.
Yeah.
I suppose it's a bit like if you're driving around on a GPS and instead of it feeding you the suburb you're in, it feeds you half the country.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. In the test that Gizmondo did, or Gizmodo, I always mispronounce that.
I wonder if it, anyway, sorry, keep going.
No, I was just going to say DeLorean technology was able to mask a round trip time of up to 250 milliseconds, which is a lag time we'd be familiar with.
Yes.
And that would, as far as they're concerned, make a game utterly unplayable. Well, they clearly need to move down here. But it masked it. There's no discernible difference between that and local co-op.
Cool.
So that is a pretty neat achievement. So obviously it's a technology that's not going to be available for a while, but you can see this being built into a lot of the cloud, considering how Microsoft is very heavily into cloud technology, especially with the Azure. You could see how this may be something that for Xbox or PC gaming or any other streaming gaming, this could be huge.
Oh, geez, yeah. Particularly once we've all got the NBN next year.
Yes.
But no, you're right. I mean, that could be a potential game changer.
Literally.
Yeah, that's right. The only request I'd make is I'd want it to be applied so that the paperclip can predict what I want Microsoft Word to do.
Well, you should probably upgrade from.
Yeah, I was going to say, because when was the last paperclip? Was that two? Yeah, I could say. I know the paperclip hasn't been there a lot of years.
I don't know when Clippy left, but we remember him.
We remember him fondly.
Excellent. That stupid dog.
Let's not go there. I'm sure there is a Microsoft Word podcast out there somewhere. I don't doubt it. And they've probably got more listeners.
Kill them with fire.
Steam might be getting TV shows, movies, and music. I mean, to some extent, that's not a huge surprise in that any of the platforms are wanting to broaden their appeal. But so that's the rumor, apparently.
Well, yes. As anyone who follows SWTOR knows, that there are people out there that mine the data files, and God bless them all. But a small update to Valve's Steam beta added some new app categories, apparently, in the code, such as TV and movies. Now, obviously, there's not really much in the way of that sort of media on Steam at the moment. I think there is a movie you can get, but that's specific to gaming. I can't quite recall what it is. Oh, here we go. Indie Game the Movie.
Oh, that's right.
That's currently available, but that's a niche genre. But the titillation here is that Valve might possibly be opening the platform up to something that could potentially rival Google Play or the iTunes Store.
Yeah.
Or even Xbox Video, which also has a pretty comprehensive store.
Quite possible.
And that's something you can access, PC players, PC users can access as well as Xbox users. So, yeah, clearly there's some issues there as far as you've got to negotiate with the studios and remember that's how long it took for Apple to get that. Gotcha. Mind you, Apple were probably being bastards, which is unusual for them, which might have delayed proceedings. But I have to admit, tantalizing as this is, it does concern me a little in the same way that EA Access. I don't know if you've heard of EA Access.
Mm.
You have?
I think so.
EA Access is basically something that Electronic Arts have been offered Sony and Microsoft, and it'll presumably come to PC as well, through Origin most likely, where you have the option of paying them $5 US, or I think it's like $7 here in Australian dollars per month, and you get access to everything in the vault. At the moment, the vault is like 4 games because it's only just started.
Yeah.
It's only on Xbox One at the moment. So there's really, what is it like? Madden, FIFA, Peggle 2, and Battlefield 4.
Okay.
So not a lot there at the moment. But and it seems like a fairly good deal, but obviously the most obvious outcome of this is you can imagine if this is successful, then Ubisoft, the first one that come to mind, and Activision and all of the other publishers are going to end up trying to have their own or yes. Access service themselves, which means you could potentially end up paying for a variety of subscriptions to access the one game in, Assassin's Creed that you want to be able to play, but then you've got to pay another subscription to another service. Yeah. I'm uncomfortable with where this potentially could head.
Yeah, that's where Google or Apple or someone will need to come in over the top and bring them all together.
Yeah. But it's the same, just going back to what we were talking about, it's the same scattered thing that I could see this being a problem. I mean, I've bought movies using Video Unlimited on the PlayStation. I do own a few movies through the Xbox Video service. And you can end up, instead of having a shelf full of DVDs, it's basically you end up with your media scattered on a variety of platforms.
That's right.
Not necessarily. I can see that digital delivery is great, but it's got to start getting a little bit more condensed, a bit more organized, because if we end up with a bunch of competing systems, we're going to end up with basically a digital delivery format wars.
That's right.
As much as anything, because you'll have some things on one thing, some things on another thing, and it's just going to get really messy really quickly.
I just like Steam to get Half-Life 3 out. I don't care about TVs and movies.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Ever? Anyway, that's for another episode. Don't tell me never.
It'll happen.
Yeah.
How old are you?
I'm the wrong side of 40. No, so maybe it won't before, but yeah, based on what average lifespan?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sad.
Anyway. You got maybe another 30 years.
Don't say that. I tell you what, in 30 years, it'll be one hell of a game, though.
Oh.
There's another
episode. No, Duke Nukem, hello. A lot of time does not a good game make, my friend.
Yeah, sorry. What I more meant was that, you know, in 30 years' time, technology for gaming should be pretty good, even if the game's pretty average.
That's true, but that's assuming that you can't just plug something into the back of your neck like the Matrix.
I think that's what it will be like. You're quite right.
But that's, of course, assuming that you're not already in the Matrix.
Sorry, I shouldn't have laughed. I should have sounded more ominous.
Yeah.
So we're done,
maybe.
Yeah?
We're done. I think so. I think that's a high note, or at least as high as we're going to get.
So for those of you listening that are thinking, my God, there's a lot packed in this episode, please don't get your hopes up that that'll be happening again. For those of you who thought, oh, this bloody podcast is all over the place, well, yeah, that's situation normal.
Exactly.
So
it's what we call colour.
Colour, exactly. So thanks, everyone, for listening. And look, as always, we'd love you to offer an opinion, suggestion, or other general abuse. So if you'd like to do so, please feel free to email us at contact@oceanicgamer.com. We love those emails we don't get. Or visit our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheOceanicGamer. On Twitter, my handle is TheOceanicGamer, and Simon tweets under RPGBeatsRL. Previous episodes of the show are on iTunes, and we're also on Stitcher, and you can see all the episodes on the website too if you click on the podcast link. Thanks very much for listening, and thank you once again, Simon, for battling through illness to stay with us.
My pleasure.
Mumbled acknowledgement. See, I've said I'm about 5,000 times, and I won't be editing them out this episode. So
I don't know how many times I've said obviously. I've really find another word.
Yeah, look, we all do. I say exactly all the time. Have a great week, everyone. And remember, if your pug wipes, it's probably because one of us was in it. Good night.
Good night.
Podcast or the person that listens to it?